Board Chair, I'm going to go ahead and call the meeting to order for the State of Arizona Board of Podiatry Examiners, April 13th, the year 2022. We roll call. Heather has gone through who's on the call. We have board members, Dr. Ilano and Dr. Foreman. Dr. Ledesma, as a guest, is appearing telephonically. Heather brought us our executive directors here, Seamus Monahan, myself, Dr. Campbell, and Dr. Farahani is our investigator who is live. So does anyone have any conflict of interest to declare on anything on the agenda? Hearing none. Just a reminder to everyone that this is a professional administrative meeting. We conduct ourselves with decorum, and so if anything gets out of hand, I have the wherewithal to remove anyone from the meeting. So let's move on. We're going to go to number five, which is our items for board review and discussion of possible action under subheading A, investigating files. We have complaint number 21-25-B, which is Dr. Paul Ledesma. Dr. Ledesma, again, is present telephonically. And Dr. Farahani is the investigator. So we'll go ahead and hear from Dr. Farahani.
Good morning, everyone. This is an investigation report for complaint number 21-25-B against Dr. Paul Ledesma, license number POD000695. I'm Dr. Farahani. The date of this investigative report was completed on 3/13/2022. This is a summary of allegation complaint information. This is a 40-year-old which presented for initial consultation of displaced calcaneal fracture of his right foot. The patient reportedly working on a 6 feet height ladder, lost his footing, and fell from 6 feet elevation on ankle declined surface. When doing so, landed directly on the back of his heel. He suffered a fracture and subluxation of fracture fragment. X-ray were taken at the hospital, ER. After multiple evaluation, was sent for evaluation by foot specialist. Was placed in a non-weight bearing with crutches and posterior splint with mild compression dressing. The patient was given pain medication for pain control and referral for a specialist evaluation. Long-standing work-related injury, multiple stage surgery was performed, fractures of the calcaneus due to a slight delay of repair, went on to eventually receiving an ORIF, suffered complication with surgery number one, resulted in resection of the calcaneal bone and Achilles tendon insertion, residual deformity and infection resulted in arthrosis of both the subtalar joint and ankle joint, due to biomechanics of the Achilles tendon sacrifice and loss calcaneal gait, resulted with development of a chronic heel ulceration, which complicated the recovery process. It was determined to further stabilize the rear foot complex by fusing both the subtalar joint and ankle joint to further enhance the stability around the foot and ankle and reduce the incidences of pressure points, such as heel in this case, with the chronic heel ulceration plantarly. The lawsuit arise stating by the attorney representing the patient on number 39, page 21, defendant Ledesma documented in his notes that he attributed some of the damage to plaintiff's heel to the slight delay in surgical treatment event and even initial evaluation. From a surgical perspective, they feel the delay of surgery on plaintiff's heel, first by BTMC in their failure to properly evaluate and treat plaintiff's condition, and secondly by Dr. Ledesma's postponement of the surgery for an additional week, caused permanent damages and injury to the plaintiff. The plaintiff suffered significant edema, swelling, breakdown of posterior aspect of the heel due to the severe displacement of the fracture caused by the delay in proper and timely treatment by defendant. The licensee written this response to the allegation, a letter was supplied to inform all parties interested that as of 1/5/2022, Dr. Ledesma and all named defendants connected with his office, including but not limited to Lisa Pellini, quote-unquote, Bosa Medical Company were dismissed from the malpractice claim regarding the treatment and care of his patient, quote-unquote, EL. Notification of this ruling was provided by the Superior Court of Arizona, Maricopa County, on 1-6-2022. Documentation of such filing was provided. Dr. Ledesma further states that this was in part due to lack of any clear evidence of any harm to the plaintiff as a result of his evaluation and treatment. The signature was affixed by Dr. Ledesma on 2-7-2022. I went over the entire document. It was about 748 pages, so I made the relevant points. On 5/24 of 2017, patient was walking on a roof, foot was on the edge, had to jump about 5 feet down, hurting right ankle, feet. This was a workers comp case. The patient worked for K10 Framing. He was transported by his by a private vehicle by his co-worker to Banner Thunderbird Hospital. The diagnosis was a displaced fracture of the body of the right calcaneus and right foot injury. Dr. Ledesma's notes state on the 5/24/2017, in light of the extensive edema, he did advise that he recommends patient be placed in a wrap and a compression dressing and an Una boot. Therapeutic Jones type compression dress was applied today, multiple layers. He recommended and ordered the patient receive cold compression device, which can be used therapeutically for both preoperatively as well as postoperatively with the patient, will need and require surgical reduction of his fracture fragment. In preparation for surgery, he did advise and recommend that the patient have stat CT exam to determine the extent of the damage within posterior and middle facade of the calcaneus to determine whether or not a primary fusion versus established open reduction and internal fixation could be attempted. In either case, surgical reduction would be recommended and advised at this stage. However, due to the amount of edema, the beginning of fracture blisters, he did advise very short waiting period to decrease overall inflammation. The patient would tentatively be scheduled for surgical reduction on the following Monday next week. On 6/1/2017, review of blood work from Sonora Quest, page 469, the white blood cells was at 12.0. On 6/5/2017, the pre-op was done, right displaced calcaneal fracture. Patient was seen 7 days prior. At the time of last visit with the fracture was 7 days old. Due to edema, surgical reduction was deemed higher risk for infection post-op. Compression dressing was applied to reduce the edema. Surgery was deferred. There was a 2 out of 4 non-pitting edema at this time. There was a presentation of ecchymosis. Consent was signed, and surgery was to proceed. On 6/7/2017, the surgical intervention, op report attached, page 316 of 748. Diagnosis was a displaced open fracture of the right calcaneal, ORIF, midline bony putty, times 5 cc striker internal fixation, screw 4-0 cannulated and striker fracture reduction plate. Placed in left lateral decubitus position, general anesthesia, adequate joint realignment was appreciated. Septillerone was not, STJ fusion was not necessary. X-ray reviewed page 322 and 323. Great alignment noted to the lateral wall, secured by plate and screws. On 7/12 of 2017, hypertensive emergency resulted, reviewed labs, page 432 out of 748. The glucose was at 334. The white blood count was at 9.5. On 7/15/2017, there was a DC summary. The patient was diabetic at 238. Alcoholism with impending withdrawal. Malignant hypertension, right heel eschar, secondary to recent right foot surgery, wound care consulted, and they deferred to podiatry. On 7/18 of 2017, recently discharged from the hospital for hypertensive emergency, released on 7/17, and there was status post calcaneal fracture, ORIF, right heel 6 weeks post-op, a moderate eschar to the posterior aspect of the heel, measuring 3.5 by 3.5, in centimeters. Dry and stable. Evidence of some bleeding from the inferior aspect of the eschar was evident on the patient's skin and the plantar arch. Incision laterally is noted to be healing with small residual area of fibrosis along the incision line. Their recommendation at that time was recasting the foot in order to protect the surgical repair site and to heal the wound. Below the knee cast applied with ample padding above and below the heel ulceration and to recheck in 2 weeks at Concentra. On 8-2-2017, there was a wound culture reviewed. There was Staph aureus heavily growth, dipteroids heavy growth. On 8-3-2017, surgery number 2 took place. Infected ulceration, right heel, abscess, right heel, complication of hardware, right heel. Patient was relatively septic with 26 white count. Patient to be monitored daily for possible additional surgical debridement and determine the viability of the remaining tissues of the foot for purposes of ruling out the possibility of below knee amputation. The x-rays intra-op viewed on page 329 and 330. The removal of retained hardware right heel, debridement of ulceration right heel down to necrotic bone, IND of the abscess right ankle, and partial calcanectomy right heel. On 8-3 of 2017, post-op visit stated pathology review, bone and articular cartilage right heel, and acute OM was noted on page 464. OM stands for osteomyelitis. 8-5 to 8-16, there were post-op visits, series of them. 8-26-2017, there was a post-op visit, 3 weeks post-op, from the hardware removal and debridement of the bone and right heel. The wound rack dressing was removed and dry sterile dressing was applied. Home nursing will reapply wound vac, discuss edema globally, and his working. Once wound stabilized, reconstructive options will be discussed. On 3-12 of 2018, which is approximately 6 months later, blood work reviewed on page 486, white blood cell 16.5, glucose at 100. On 9-7-2018, blood work was completed, page 493, white blood cell 15.3, BUN 32. 9-10 of 2018, surgery number 3 took place, history of osteomyelitis, right foot / ankle, bone biopsy, distal tibial right, deep biopsy talus, deep bone biopsy, calcaneal right heel, right foot. Returning for follow-up treatment, previous complication of fracture repair and subsequent OM. Patient has been chronically dealing with the unfortunate complication of failed ORIF of the calcaneal fracture, which resulted eventually in osteomyelitis and further resection of calcaneus involving both the ankle joints as well. The patient now has stabilized most of his wounds, but he continues to have significant pain around the SDJ and rear foot areas. It was proposed that the patient would likely benefit from fusion at this stage. However, due to the historical pathogens that were present in the soft tissues and bone in the area where effusion would take place, it was deemed appropriate to perform bone biopsies to ensure lack of infection or residual within the bony tissue before completing the bone fusion. All risks and benefits were discussed with the patient in detail. That's the note it entails by Dr. Ledesma. 9-11-2018, surgical pathology report, page 465. No reference of OM was noted. On 11-5 of 2018, surgery number 4, ankle fusion with bone graft, right ankle, hammer toe correction, right second toe, debridement of the right heel ulceration and with application of allograft, right heel. Long-standing work-related injury, fractures, calcaneus due to slight delay of repair, went on to eventual ORIF, suffered complication with surgery number 1, resulted resection of the calcaneal bone and Achilles tendon insertion, residual deformity infection resulted in arthrosis of both the SDJ and ankle joint. Due to the biomechanics of the Achilles tendon sacrifice and lost calcaneal gait resulted with development of the chronic heel ulceration, which complicated the recovery process. It was determined to further stabilize the rear foot complex by fusing both the SDJ and ankle joint to further enhance the stability around the foot and ankle compress and reduce incidences of pressure points such as heel, in this case with chronic heel ulceration plantarly. On 1-14-2020, patient presented today for a follow-up right foot using compressive stocking, brace, and accommodative shoes. Patient now using cane for ambulation. PT 2 times per week. Notice improvement with swelling, but only during the therapy sessions. Continue to have swelling in right foot. Right great toe wound, non-healing. Cyst in the right ankle burst recently. Applied gauze and tape to keep it on. Revision of the ankle fusion not advised at this time. Amputation is the only logical alternative. Based on the location of the pathology, below knee amputation would be recommended. They spoke at length this would entail, from a surgical standpoint, recovery and the pros and cons. Dr. Ledesma felt this was the patient's best interest to move on the amputation, which should dramatically reduce his ongoing pain and swelling, as well as significantly improve his mobility and function. Dr. Ledesma advised that he will not be the surgeon due to scope of practice issues. He recommends Dr. Jaffe and Steen Johnson. He offered to continue to monitor until such time that patient can schedule the surgery. Patient amenable to this recommendation and would like to move forward with the surgery. the licensee interview, there was a letter supplied to me by Dr. Ledesma affixed on 2-7-2022 that the charges of the malpractice regarding the treatment care of patient EL was dropped. And my investigative report conclusion, I reviewed 748 pages provided to me through Dr. Ledesma and the board. I believe through my, actually before saying that, one of the board members requested that all the surgical consents be provided, and all the surgical consents in my review were consistent with what was written in Dr. Ledesma's documentation. So I believe that Dr. Ledesma followed the standard of care thoroughly. I disagree with the previous attorney that of its allegation, as I believe that Dr. Ledesma followed this patient thoroughly as per protocol. And a comment from me as a practicing provider, a initial delay of surgery, I think, was really appropriate because of the long withstanding level of edema. And you wouldn't do any type of surgical intervention when you have that much edema. That would cause significant post-op complications. Yet the patient really developed post-op complications in any ways, but that's something that I wouldn't have done either. So I personally find this allegation against Dr. Ledesma to be unsubstantiated.
Thank you, Dr. Farahani, for the very thorough investigation review. I certainly agree with you. I mean, I don't believe there was a breach of care, and obviously this is a very unfortunate accident with just, you know, a severe trauma with progression, particularly in someone with multiple health problems, as this gentleman did. On the consent issue, I know that doctor, you know, I requested those consents because just to see that they were appropriately done. And I know Dr. Ledesma indicated in his medical records that he gave a detailed consent. My concern is that a blanket statement and a chart that says you gave thorough concern is a blanket statement, and there's no evidence of detailed descriptions of the risks and complications that were discussed or detailed drawings, etc. So that's just something that I'm strong on, that I think that, you know, this, it doesn't, it's important. Because if things had progressed differently, with if the case had continued, those items may have become something important in the thing. So I just generally speak to all my colleagues that, you know, having more thorough, detailed description of consent in a medical record is important, as well as, too, when writing a consent form, that you also include lay language, because we can't expect our patients to know all the medical terms. Just a comment. Dr. Ulano or Dr. Foreman, do you have any questions for Dr. Farahani?
Very complete work, Dr. Farahani. I have no questions.
Thank you, Dr. Foreman. Dr. Ulano?
No questions for Dr. Farhani. And good point, Dr. Campbell. I feel this is unfortunate, and Dr. Ledesma didn't do anything under the community standard. He did well.
Okay. Dr. Ledesma, do you want to make a statement or give a summary of things?
Yeah, so you know, first off, I appreciate the comments, and Dr. Campbell, I agree. I think sometimes we get complacent with our documentation on certain things, and it, generally it is easier just to kind of say we went over a detailed consent, and I have in many cases in the past detailed more specifically based on the procedures what the complications could be, and this one just wasn't one of them. But and I appreciate that comment, and I do take that into account, and we'll keep that in my memory bank for further consent. Yeah, regarding this particular case, I really was, you know, this patient, I saw him for, as you can see by the records, for quite a number of years. And as we all know, we can get kind of attached, and I really felt, you know, just terrible for this guy. He was in a bad situation and unfortunate circumstance with when his trauma happened, the kind of health condition he was in. I don't know if, I know Dr. Farhani did an amazingly thorough job reviewing the records, and my points that stick out to me is that I wish he wasn't as uncontrolled of a diabetic as he was, and as much of a smoker. I actually did get him to quit, but it took probably halfway through his care to get him there. And I know that played into a lot of his complications. My only desire for his case, and I think it could have gone a lot better. We would have had a better opportunity to save his overall condition. At least the way I felt about it was that I wish they had done something right away when he was seen initially. I was actually kind of surprised that he had gotten to the hospital, been evaluated by a couple of physicians, and nobody thought to just take care of him right away. And then by the time I got him, he was already swollen to the point where I felt it was too much of a risk to do anything at the moment. And, you know, that was the reason for my slight delay in his initial procedure. But, you know, ultimately, I think he hopefully ended up in a much better position from where he left me, because he was still struggling with pain and the immobility due to his extremity. And I think I read in some records afterwards that he did finally get his amputation. And thankfully, with the way prosthetics are these days, hopefully he would gain some of his you know, quality of life.
Well, I think, you know, I think you did extraordinary care with this patient. And just, this is just a comment. When I was in my training in the early 80s, if we had seen a case like this, I worked at the county hospital in Los Angeles, and that would have gone directly to an amputation. The, you know, that's what the standard of care would have been by orthopedics, emergency orthopedics, was to just do that. But, you know, since we have so many better things, at least you gave the guy a chance, but you ultimately did the best thing for him. So, thank you. Dr. Foreman or Dr. Ilana, do you have any questions for Dr. Ledesma?
No, I don't.
No questions for Dr. Ledesma.
Thank you so much, Dr. Ilana. Well, seeing that we've had the discussion that we've had, I'm going to go ahead and make a motion to dismiss case 21-25-B for Dr. Paul Ledesma, seeing that there were no violations of state statutes.
Second.
Thank you, Dr. Foreman. Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? So moved. Thank you. Bye, Dr. Farhani. Thank you again, Dr. Ledesma.
Thank you so much. Have a great day.
You too. All righty. Okay. Now, let me see. We're going to move on. We're going to change course here and go to, yes, item six, which is review, discussion, and possible action regarding a national practitioner data bank report received pertaining to Dr. Melissa Galley, DPM. Dr. Galley is present with her attorney, Cody Hall. So please have a seat here at the desk. Let me...
And Dr. Campbell, I just wanted to clarify for the record, because I think there might have been some confusion. This complaint has not been in, it's not a complaint. It hasn't been investigated. The board is simply here to talk with Dr. Galley and your attorney to decide whether they want to open a case in order to investigate.
That is correct. So that's what I would direct to my board members, that that is what our decision is to be today, as to whether this will be, that we will create a board-generated complaint and proceed into an investigative mode here. So we have, like I said, we have Dr. present. So I will, Heather, do you have anything you needed to add to that?
I do not. I am available to answer any questions. I can just say that this is before the board because I received a report from the National Practitioners Data Bank.
Correct.
And I can answer any other questions the board might have.
Okay. So I think the best way to proceed here is I'm going to ask Dr. Galley and or her counsel for a brief statement, and then we'll have some discussion, as I have some concerns that I'd like to present. So please proceed.
My name is Cody Hall, and I do represent Dr. Galley in response to the data bank report that was submitted to the board. I did previously submit a letter responding to the what I believe are the allegations that could be under investigation. My intent in showing up this morning with Dr. Galley was simply to allow her to answer any questions any board member may have to make a determination whether they want to go through the more formalized investigation process by opening a complaint and requiring further investigation. So Dr. Galley is certainly here to answer any questions any board member has, if that will assist in either hopefully deciding not to open a complaint, but or at least identify issues that should be addressed in the complaint investigation. Thank you.
Okay, well, then I will begin. My concerns in this, which, of course, in order to do our due diligence, number one, I really feel that an investigation is necessary because that's what the process that we follow, that an investigator reviews, because there are some items, again, that we went ahead and requested a surgical consent because there wasn't anything in the doctor's medical records, but it was, we did receive that came from, was it Banner? Banner Health. So that's the consent issue. Again, as you just heard me make my statement to Dr. Ledesma about the importance of informed consent, that yes, you may have it written in your chart that you gave a thorough discussion, but there's nothing in there that substantiates that, then all you have is the consent from the hospital, which is very generic. I also have... there's also, you know, also some of my concerns have to go back to some of the documentation or evaluation of the patient previously, and again, these questions I don't feel that are pertinent to ask at this time because we don't have a thorough review from an investigator. There have been issues in the past regarding documentation and consents. So those, again, are my main concerns, and I believe that the only way to do everyone the best as far as getting more information, having a review, having other board members review other materials that we're going to need in having a thorough investigation is certainly pertinent. I have would like to hear from my fellow board members if what their opinions are on my comments. Dr. Foreman.
Hey, Dr. Campbell.
Yes, sir.
I agree with what you said.
Dr. Yolanda, do you have any remarks?
Absolutely, yes. To protect the public, and I'd like to have the full records and see in deciding that.
So, I should entertain any comments and from Dr. Galley.
You should let them respond.
Yeah, so if you want to respond to those remarks that we that have been addressed.
So the office notes, I believe, were all given, or just the 14-page letter? Because so this is the, our surgical consents are obtained on the date of surgery, but certainly in the office, I go over the procedures with the patient, list them out, and also pertinent to the particular procedures, that was all listed in the office notes on the day that, that we signed the patient up for surgery. So there's two kind of different areas of documentation, so I just want to make sure that that was reviewed.
The procedure's not done yet.
This is a banner consent, so banner makes you do on the date of surgery.
But yeah, and my the issue is though when you write again when you write a blanket statement that you gave a thorough consent and it's not in your banner record but only in your or in your record at CORE or but it's only showing up at the hospital, it leaves a lot of stuff open to interpretation and that you're. You know, you're just saying you did it, but if there becomes questions, like I know your case was settled, but there's still this question. And that, for me, our job here on this board is to protect the public. And part of protecting the public is doing our due diligence with proper investigations. The investigation may turn out show that there's nothing that was done that was incorrect, but we have to do our due diligence, and that is my feeling. And that if you have any other remarks you want to make before that, before we come to a decision here as to how we are going to proceed and move forward.
I would comment as well.
Can you speak up? It's coming in and out into the mic.
I apologize. That's better. I'm not bending down trying to talk. Just to recap, the patient/plaintiff did testify in the underlying litigation that she had a detailed conversation with Dr. Galley in the office about the treatment plan and the procedures that were planned. And we do run into this issue an awful lot in the civil litigation arena, which is patients often will try to bring an informed consent claim. And the one of the common arguments we hear is if it wasn't documented, it wasn't done. But the fact of the matter is, if a patient testifies that they had an informed consent discussion, then you would have to believe that the informed consent discussion occurred, regardless of whether a separate documentation has been signed. I do think the written documentation for informed consent have become so popular as a form of, quote, defensive medicine, so a doctor can say, no, listen, I did have this discussion with you, you signed it. But I don't believe that is the issue in this particular situation because the patient did admit under oath that she had an informed consent discussion with Dr. Galley about the surgery and the treatment plan. So that would be my only other comment.
Well,
Thank you.
It's part of an investigation, though. The investigator does speak with the complainant to get have that interview.
This is Assistant Attorney General Seamus Monahan. If we have any documentation of that testimony, then that would really help the investigation to clear up that issue, right?
I would certainly think so. I mean, I can submit the deposition testimony. I mean, if you open an investigation, I obviously will be doing so.
Yeah.
Under Arizona law, the plaintiff's counsel should have submitted all the deposition testimony to the board once the case was settled, but we know that often does not happen. So.
Yeah, but that's right, and that's part of doing the due diligence is that every document is reviewed and on file because, like I said, you know, that can make the difference on what decisions are made. So I think we're kind of at that point where it's just time to go ahead and move on, and I will make a motion to move this to investigation, open a board complaint, and Heather will assign that number.
And what are your potential? What are your potential allies?
Well, we're the proper surgical consent issue and preoperative evaluation of a patient. Do I have a second?
Second.
Thank you, Dr. Ilano. And is there any other discussion?
And if we could do roll call.
Yeah, and we're going to do a roll call vote. So, Dr. Ilano?
Aye.
Dr. Foreman?
Aye.
Dr. Campbell? Aye. Okay, so Heather will be in contact, and it's the process with assigning an investigator. And then I'm sure that when the investigator looks at the file, they will then make a list of other records that need to be received.
If they think so.
If they think it's necessary. So Heather will take care of that. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
So we'll go back and go back to number four, which is review discussion of possible action on our board meeting minutes, the general session meeting minutes of March 9, 2022. Does anyone have any concerns or questions, additions, or corrections for the minutes? Okay. Hearing none, I will make a motion to accept the general session minutes of March 9, 2022 as written.
Seconded.
Thank you, Dr. Foreman. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? So moved. All righty. Then we'll move on to subsection B of number five, the issuance of licenses. We have two here. Let me. Our first is Dr. Christopher Bolin, and this is an application via comedy. We have the attestation that they have been in practice since 2013. Fees are paid. All documents have been presented. And again, remember, this includes now the initial registration to dispense drugs and devices is included. So does anyone have any questions or concerns with this application? Okay. Hearing none, I'll make a motion to approve the application for initial licensure through via comedy, which includes the initial application to dispense drugs and devices, and to issue the license upon payment of the license issuance fee.
Seconded.
Thank you, Dr. Foreman. Any discussion? All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
So moved. Our next is Jacob Wolfram. This is application for a regular license. The doctor is currently in his residency and will be graduating in June of this year. Because he doesn't have a DEA, that will have to be sent later because, again, our licensing has the drugs and devices included. So does anyone have any concerns or questions about this application? Okay. Hearing none, I will make a motion to accept Dr. Wolfram's application and issue a license upon completion of his residency program and payment of the license issuance fee.
Seconded. Seconded.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
So moved. All right, next we'll move on to C, which is the application for registration, initial registration to dispense drugs and devices. Dr. Petrina Lewis, and everything is in order. She's paid her fee, and we've got her DEA registration. Any questions or concerns? Okay, hearing none, I will make a motion to accept Dr. Lewis's initial application or application for initial registration to dispense drugs and devices.
Seconded.
Thank you. Any discussion? All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Aye. So moved. All right. We've done, okay, so now let's move to Heather's Executive Director's report.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair, Board members. On March 23rd, 2022, the Board received final approval from the Governor's Office to submit the Board's rule package to the Governor's Regulatory Review Council. The package, I did submit that to the Governor's Regulatory Review Council, and with their deadline schedule, the rule package should be scheduled for their May 24th, 2022 study session agenda. And then their council session to approve rules is scheduled for June 1st, 2022. So I will continue to monitor that and keep the board apprised. On February 9th, the board entered into a non-disciplinary order for continuing education for complaint number 2103 regarding Dr. Seth Clark. Dr. Clark did complete the requirements on April 6, 2022, and in consultation with the board chair, he was released from the order. I also recently received an email from the Auditor General, and the podiatry board was randomly selected to have one board member's expense reimbursement audited. I've not received any other information since I received the email, but I will keep the board apprised on that matter. I also submitted the most current budget, and I submitted the complaint log, and there have been no new complaints added since I submitted that. And that concludes my summary, and I can answer any questions.
Heather. Does anyone have any questions for Heather? So let's move on to 8, which is the legislative update and discussion.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair, board members. There has been some movement on some of the bills, so I'm going to address just those bills that there's been movement, as I've already provided a summary on all of the bills. SB 1052 relating to public health did not pass, so that bill is considered dead. SB 1111 relating to controlled substances did not pass the Senate, so that bill is also considered dead. SB 1127 relating to the control of receipts and expenditures did not pass the Senate and is considered dead. SB 1162 relating to controlled substances was amended, and it did passed the Senate and is awaiting the Senate and the House and is awaiting transmission to the governor. The amendment just took out part of the definition of chronic intractable pain. SB 1568 relating to health professionals' complaints investigations has been amended. It requires that a regulatory board establish the eligibility criteria required to enter into a non-disciplinary confidential program through a published policy or rulemaking by January 1st, 2023. The section regarding requiring the board to pay for any fitness for duty exams has been struck from the bill. And the bill did pass the Senate and has been transmitted to the House and is awaiting a third read in the House. SB 1670 relating to the governor did not pass the Senate and is considered dead. House Bill 2770 relating to public meeting and proceedings has been amended, and that bill passed the House and is awaiting a motion to reconsider in the Senate, and it because it did not initially pass the Senate. House Bill 2147 relating to the Department of Veterans Services did not pass the House and is considered dead. House Bill 2162 relating to public meetings and proceedings did not pass the House and is considered dead. House Bill 2371 relating to fiscal provisions for state agencies did pass the House and is awaiting a third read in the Senate. House Bill 2412 relating to public meetings and proceedings was amended. So this bill, the amendment requires a public body to post the minutes and the digital or audio visual recording of the meeting on its website no later than 3 working days after the meeting. So that bill passed the House and is awaiting a third read in the Senate. House Bill 2599 relating to administrative procedures was amended. The bill requires a regulatory entity to submit a universal licensure recognition application to the governor's office for review prior to a denial. And the bill prohibits a state agency from conducting any rulemaking without prior written approval of the governor. And those that have already been in effect through executive orders for the last couple of years. So now it's just being put into statute. So that bill passed the House and is awaiting a third read in the Senate. House Bill 2612 is relating to occupational regulation, and this is a new one that was brought to my attention. This bill was signed by the governor on March 24th, and it strikes Section 1 under ARS 32-823A is of good moral character pertaining to an applicant for licensure. And the Podiatry Board is not the only board affected by this bill. And that concludes my summary. I can answer any questions.
Thank you.
Anybody have any questions for Heather? All right. So moving on to 9, which is a summary of current events. Is there anything to relate here? Okay, thank you. And 10 here is call to the public. There is no public left here to call. So our next will be 11. Does anyone have any items they'd like to see placed on the agenda, future agenda items for discussion? No. Okay. And as always, if anything comes up, please send something to Heather to request that. Our next board meeting is May the 11th, 2022. And if any, does anyone have any further comments or business? Hearing none, I will move to adjourn the meeting at 9:28 a.m., seeing that all agenda items have been thoroughly addressed. Have a second? Thank you. Any discussion? All in favor? Aye.
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 Opposed? So moved. Very good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yep.